high intensity workouts are actually pushing your cortisol higher, you know? So walks, I mean, I live, you know, near the mountains and I'm very grateful for that. So I spend a lot of time doing that. You know, people are like walking and I'm like, it is the best underrated exercise out there. You know, just if you walked every day, that would be amazing. It impacts your blood sugar in a positive way, all of these ways. You know, yoga, I think, can be fabulous. Pilates, all of these sort of connectors of your mind and your body to really just take everything, you know, down a notch and get into your body. And then start to create more boundaries in other parts of your life. This is just key, you know, and you have to be really honest with yourself. And again, this is really helpful to work with a coach because often we don't see where we don't have boundaries. And often we don't see where we are just letting all of this energy go out. And really, when you're in what we call cortisol dysregulation, you want to be pulling in instead of putting out all the time.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach.
I'm so excited to chat with you today, Christine, about cortisol and its impacts on sex. This is something I've never discussed on the podcast. I was very intrigued, and I think that shedding a little bit of light on the impacts of stress and cortisol in our bodies is going to be very informational. So I'd love to just open it up and have you tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Christine Garvin, and actually it was just my 5-year anniversary from when I had a surgery to remove a fibroid. It was my first surgery ever. I didn't know anything about fibroids before I found out that I had one. And by the time I found out I had one, it was a pretty large fibroid at that point. And so got it surgically removed. They said everything went perfectly wonderful. I went home and then I progressively got worse and worse over the next 2 weeks. Of course, being a woman, we push through the pain, which I like to be an example of why you shouldn't do this, because I did land in the ER with sepsis 2 weeks after the surgery. The surgeon actually told my family that if it had been a day later, I would have been dead. So they unknowingly burned me in 3 places in my intestines during that fibroid surgery removal. And basically gastric juices were just dumping into my abdominal cavity. So I ended up having to go into emergency surgery. And they tried to save the part of my colon that had been burned, but they were unable to. So I ended up losing about half of my colon and about 8 inches of small intestine, my appendix, and I ended up having an ostomy bag for about 6.5 months. And as you can imagine, this was extremely life-changing. I was a dance instructor and performer, you know, for many years leading up to that. So I couldn't dance anymore. I really had to spend a lot of time healing, you know, coming back from the brink of death. And really, it got me focused on, well, what got me there in the first place? And it came down to having this fibroid. And I didn't really understand why that had happened, you know, because I'd done nutrition work years before, but I really didn't know that much about hormones. And I find that this is true for so many women. Most of us, we weren't taught anything about hormones, right? It's not our fault. And I love this time in history because I think this information is coming out in a way that it never has before and really empowering women to have the options around their body and to have the knowledge around their body where they can make different decisions and they can go into a situation like what I went into and just thought, well, surgery was my only option. And now I know that wasn't necessarily the case. And, you know, so basically I dove into doing an apprenticeship in hormones, and then I dove more into the functional side of nutrition. So learning about testing for gut health and hormones and, you know, serum labs and all of that. And of course, I did all that work on myself in the process, because really from a situation like where I was in, it was, you know, 2 years of healing. And so here I am today working with women, really focused on, you know, kind of the time of life that I'm in, which is perimenopause now. And fibroids are hugely common in perimenopause, up to 80% of women will have a fibroid by the time they're 50. So yeah, it's a big deal. And I really, you know, love just the educational component and empowering women to have those choices around their body.
Yes, it's so important. And I've talked about fibroids before on the podcast. I have a good girlfriend. She's known as the Fibroid Queen on Instagram. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her.
Phyllis?
Yes.
I've had her on my podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah. And it's like these conversations just are not had. And that's honestly what started my own podcast is that I learned after PA school. Even in PA school, we were taught just a little bit of women's health, very minuscule part. But I learned that so many women didn't know the basics about their body and potential things that are warning signs, things to look out for. We just didn't know what we didn't know. And that's what really started the podcast. So yeah, I absolutely love that. I work in fertility. That's kind of like my day job. And so I see fibroids all of the time. And it's just one of those things that patients, women, don't really understand what they are. Surgery is not your only option and it's not a requirement. Mm-hmm. And there are other ways to manage them. And so, oh, we could totally go in a deep dive, but I love, you know, that you're bringing light to hormones and talking about that on your own podcast, Hormonally Speaking, because we need to learn about it. Even when I was in school, we talked about the menstrual cycle and it's like, oh, there's four hormones. Okay, cool. And it wasn't until I really did my own personal deep dive, even working in fertility, I understood them more. But my own personal journey really led me to truly understand all of the sex hormones and what's actually happening in the body. And oh, yeah, what does birth control really do? So I could go on for days and days and days about this because I'm also very passionate about holistic medicine and functional medicine and hormones. So what, like when we start talking about cortisol, I would love for you to give us a little bit of background about what exactly is cortisol and its impact on the body.
Yeah. So cortisol is our main stress hormone. So I like to think of cortisol as sort of the long, drawn out stress hormone versus adrenaline is that sort of, you know, I'm about to get in a car accident and your whole body starts pounding, you know, if you think that that's going to happen. Like that is an adrenaline release in a situation like that. So that kind of stress hormone versus cortisol is, as I mentioned, sort of this long stretched out stress hormone. But I always like to let people know it's not just a stress hormone, right? We need cortisol in order to literally get out of bed and get through our day, right? So we need a certain amount of cortisol and you know, really, it should be highest in the morning, about an hour or so, hour and a half after you wake up. And then it should have a slow decline throughout the day. And then melatonin should take over, you know, in the early evening. That's our sleep hormone. As cortisol is at its lowest point, hopefully, melatonin rises to its highest point, and that's what helps us sleep throughout the night. And then again, cortisol starts raising in the morning, even before you wake up, in order to wake you up. So this is really our circadian rhythm at work, right? And our circadian rhythm is the basis for our infradian rhythm, so our whole menstrual cycle, right? So it's when it comes down to it, cortisol, really managing cortisol and understanding how cortisol works in your body, and melatonin, so we get that circadian rhythm really, you know, in track. And then insulin is also another hormone that has such a huge impact that when people come to me and they start talking about estrogen or progesterone and, you know, all of these very important hormones, you got to take a step back. We can't just dive into changing levels of estrogen and progesterone without talking about cortisol and insulin, right? Because they're up here. And really, we think of estrogen and progesterone, and then, of course, other, you know, sex hormones like testosterone and DHEA, they're downstream. Let's just put it that way. And so cortisol has such a major impact on so many aspects of our life that I think most of us don't recognize maybe in our 20s or our 30s because things are generally working pretty well and we can kind of push. We can push the envelope, right? We can get into the hustle mode, which was so popular there for a few years, right? It's like, get your side hustle on, do this, do that. And you can kind of make that all happen. But then suddenly as your other sex hormones, you know, start to shift in your 30s and particularly in your later 30s and 40s, cortisol becomes even more important and you're going to feel it even more. And that is when the real struggle can begin, you know. And so really what is happening for so many people is that they're pushing and driving that cortisol high much more of the day, and then unfortunately sometimes in the night, than it needs to be, right? And that's part of what is happening when we're talking about insomnia, when we're talking about waking up at 3 a.m. It's a cortisol spike that's happening essentially. And then what ends up happening over time is that your body will actually, what we call, downregulate that cortisol production, because our bodies are smart and everything is coming from our brain, right? Our hypothalamus and pituitary glands are overseeing our entire endocrine system. And they're going to say, whoa, 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 we've been pushing out cortisol, too much cortisol for too long. It's suppressing your immune system. It's doing all these things. We need to like reel this back in. And so suddenly you have people that are struggling to get out of bed, struggling to get through their day, to wake up at all. And that's because their cortisol has actually gone low now. It's not that they don't have enough cortisol. It's just the body has downregulated. And that's when you really see people start to struggle on a different level.
What all does cortisol actually impact in our day-to-day life?
Well, like I said, being able to get out of bed in the morning and feel alive and awake, you know, that is such a huge thing that most people don't realize. And I get this so much with my clients. They say to me, yeah, I wake up exhausted, you know, and that's a good sign that your cortisol is a little too low in the morning, right? And this, again, has probably happened over time. You probably had high cortisol for a while and then it started going low. And I always like to tell people one of the great ways to combat that, you know, one of the best free ways is to just look at the sun. If you can, you know, if there's sun available when you wake up, wherever you live, look at that, not directly, obviously, but look, you know, around it so that that light hits your eyes, because that's going to stimulate your cortisol production and get you going on this track throughout the day. Another side note, protein in the morning is very helpful for helping to regulate your cortisol throughout the day, and your blood sugar, and cortisol and blood sugar are very interconnected. And then I'd say the other big thing that, you know, really impacts a lot of people in their day when it comes to cortisol is that afternoon slump. We really start to see people around that 2, 3, 4 p.m. time just start to nosedive. That's when they want the caffeine, the sugar, to kind of like push it out again, right? And stimulate both your blood sugar and your cortisol production. And, you know, I give a little caveat, because our circadian rhythm kind of does naturally take a little bit of a dip anyway in that afternoon. And that's, it's kind of okay. We, you know, I always say we should trade with the kids. The adults should be napping and the kids should be running off their energy, you know? But still, if you're just bottomed out, struggling, can't do anything in the afternoon, that's a good sign that your cortisol is off, you know? So those are some big impacts, I think, you know, in the daily life that a lot of people can relate to.
I definitely feel so seen. And that's why I was over here laughing, because I have that afternoon slump ultimately. Slump. And I'm a projector in human design. So there is a lot of need for naps as well, yes, in my life. But I have gone through kind of that hustle life for so long. And so I am so intrigued by all of this. How does your cortisol impact your sex hormones and your sex?
Yeah. So really, we, you know, as I mentioned before, you always have to really look at cortisol first, primarily starting off because of its connection to progesterone, right? So what ends up happening, there's kind of a twofold here. What ends up happening is that cortisol and progesterone, if you see a pathway of hormones, they actually go down the same pathway. So if you're under stress all of the time and you're not producing enough cortisol because maybe your body downregulated that cortisol production, your body can actually convert progesterone to cortisol to use cortisol. And the thing is, this is our, you know, infinite wisdom of our bodies. They're more interested in keeping us alive than having a baby, right? So, and let me put the caveat on that. Obviously, not everyone is trying to have a baby every month that they menstruate, right? A lot of us are trying to not. But from a biological standpoint, that is what our bodies ultimately want to do, is reproduce. But if you are running from a saber-toothed tiger, from an evolutionary standpoint, right, it's like we don't have the nutrients, the energy, anything to growing and housing a child, right? So we're basically more concerned with keeping you alive, which is what we're doing with that cortisol. I always say we need cortisol or we would literally be dead. So it's going to focus on keeping that cortisol up, and it's going to start down regulating your sex hormones, particularly in the instance I just mentioned with the progesterone, you know, but also your brain, because all of the endocrine system is connected via your hypothalamus and pituitary glands in your brain, it's going to do that total kind of overall down regulation of your sex hormones. And it becomes more and more complicated because sometimes I'll have clients come to me and I'm like, well, I can guarantee before we even test that your progesterone's probably low, your cortisol's either running high or it's, you know, really low at this point. And then, you know, they say, well, why is my estrogen high? And so here we are, when we live in a society that has so many chemicals that act as estrogen in our bodies, we can actually still have high estrogen, not even based on our own estrogen production, right? These chemicals that our body reads as estrogen, called xenoestrogens. So you have that, you have heavy metals, you have all these things. And then particularly in perimenopause, you're going to have the ups and downs just naturally of estrogen production. So we're causing a real chaotic situation here, right? If we have especially high estrogen or even up-down estrogen, and then you have lowered progesterone production because of that cortisol, that focus on that cortisol, and this becomes ripe for things like fibroid growth, for ovarian cysts, for fibrocystic breasts, all of them, right? And then even if you haven't gotten to that place, just bad PMS is a really, you know, good place to start. And when your body's down-regulating your sex hormones, do you think you're going to feel really sexy or excited about
Absolutely
sex at all?
Not.
No. And so that is how it all, you know, fits together. And you can kind of see it if we go back to that hustle mentality that, you know, so many of us have had for a while because the culture sort of pushed it on us, like, oh, you can do all the things. And I always say, you can do all the things, but not all at once. And don't try to do it all at once, right? Because your body has to feel safe. You have to have that cortisol regulated in order for your sex hormones to work well. And you're not going to feel like good and juicy and yummy when you're like pedal to the metal all the time, right? And having that cortisol out of control.
Yeah. And when you're stressed, I mean, you're not going to want sex anyways.
Yep.
For a lot of people, some people, right, it might be the opposite,
right,
but generally speaking, stress is a huge damper on desire.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a biological dampening via basically what I was just talking about, right? When you downregulate your sex hormone production, you're not going to be as excited and fiery in any of those things, right? And it can also impact even just ovulation, right? If you have that downregulation and then you don't ovulate, and we know for most of us, that is when we feel our sexiest, right? We feel our like most excited and desirable and desiring. So if you don't have ovulation or you don't have a good ovulation, then you're missing out there. And then you're also missing out on that sweet, sweet progesterone that is only produced after we ovulate too.
So for people who have like chronic stress, especially, mm-hmm, how does that impact the cortisol? I mean, what I'm hearing is that basically it just causes this down regulation. And then what do you do to fix that?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, in general, it's very interesting because I can see, you know, on testing, I will see usually it's either sort of high cortisol across the board, or it's flipped to where your cortisol is lowest when it should be highest and highest when it should be lowest. Or, you know, obviously in extreme situations, when people are really suffering, women are really suffering, very low cortisol. And it's something that we can't supplement our way out of, right? The first question is always like, which supplement can I take? And I will talk about supplements here in a minute, but that the reason I don't start there is because that in and of itself is not going to get you out of that state. It absolutely 110% has to be lifestyle changes, right? And so that means anywhere from, okay, I feel like, you know, I have kids, I have work, I have partner, I have family I have to take care of, all of these things. I have so many clients like this, and they're like, I just don't even have any time in here to fit, to start to, you know, bring things back to level. And I say, start with 5 minutes a day. My favorite time to start with 5 minutes a day is that 3 p.m., 4 p.m. time, whenever you feel a little bit of that slump, like allow your body to rest during that time, right? And when we're talking about our nervous system, we're talking about our sympathetic nervous system and our parasympathetic nervous system. And our sympathetic is that, you know, that stress state. So that like fight or flight, freeze response, but, you know, not to the extreme necessarily, but you are in that when you're just going all the time. And that's a great place to be when you're trying to get things done, but we need that balance of our parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest, repair, digest, and sex system, essentially, right? That's where you're going to be able to get into all of that. So start with 5 minutes a day at 3 p.m. or what have you, and meditate or do some deep breathing or visualizations. I love Insight Timer. It's got tons of options on there for free. To just, you know, any of the things I just said are on there, because, you know, not everybody can just like sit and meditate. I get it, you know? So you have to find something that's going to work for you, even if that's just a walk outside, you know, anything to sort of take you out of, you want to get out of that sort of focused mind place and into your body.
I love that you said 5 minutes a day. I literally did a speaking engagement with a group of moms this past weekend. And that's another population where it's like so difficult to find the time for it. And I'm like, start with 5 minutes.
Yep.
Just 5 minutes a day for you, whatever that looks like. But I love that. And definitely utilizing that slump time where you're already like, I don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. Utilizing that same time to go and invest into your well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be surprising sometimes how even after 5 minutes, you can feel re-energized, right? Just giving your body that little bit of break. And of course, you know, if you can do 10 minutes or 15 minutes, that's even better. But I always say just start with that 5 minutes. And then can you work your way up to maybe 5 minutes twice a day? You know, just see where these pockets are. And sometimes talk with a friend or a coach or something to figure it out. Like I remember having a client who was just like, intense job, had to go pick up her kid from school, you know, get home, do all the cooking and everything. And she's like, I just don't have time. And we figured out that she could actually leave work 5 minutes early. That was okay. Go pick up her kid. And she was always waiting in the line, you know, to pick up her kid for at least 5 minutes. So here she suddenly had 10 minutes. I was like, put the, you know, Bluetooth on. Turn it up in your car and just like lay back and meditate, breathe, whatever it is, right? And that's what it takes sometimes is really just talking through with somebody and figuring out, okay, where's the pocket? Because we all do have pockets. It may not feel like it, but we all do.
Yeah, my phone tells me how much time I spend on Instagram. And I'm like, okay, I spend 2 hours a day on Instagram doing what? Like I literally could learn a whole new hobby in the amount of time right. that I spend scrolling Instagram. And I think that I love that you brought up using a coach because I talked with women about this all the time too, but having somebody to hold you accountable and help you identify those areas is so helpful because Absolutely. When you're looking at it from your own perspective, you're in it. You don't see it. But when you see it from your, maybe you get that outside bird's eye view of what's happening, you can see these little pockets, you know, what does 5 minutes earlier in the morning look like? Mm-hmm. What does, you know, dropping your kid off 5 minutes earlier, going for a walk during lunch, like leave the building. You don't need to stay at work or just those little tiny things like, but you got to get creative sometimes. Yes. And it may not look like the way you expect it to look.
Absolutely. And I always dive deep into talking about boundaries with my clients and people in my groups, because that is what it really ends up being, right? You're creating a boundary to allow time for yourself. And this is going to make you a better everything, right? You're going to end up being a better mother. You're going to end up being a better partner. You're going to end up being better for your work. All of these things, when you have some kind of, you know, stuff inside for yourself, and we have to fill up ourselves. And I know that this is a message that, is coming at all of us a lot more these days, but I keep saying it and I have to keep reminding my clients about it because it's so easy to fall into the old trappings of we have to always give, 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 give. And if you want to bring your sex life back, you 100% have to start giving more to yourself, because you're not going to feel it if you're not giving to yourself.
Yeah, that's so true. And the saying, like, you can't pour from an empty cup, but it is true. If you don't have anything to give, like, you have to care for yourself first, which is a really hard concept when, as women, we are many times taught to abandon ourselves or disregard ourselves and our own needs. And like you said, put everybody else first. And so it's a hard, challenging thing to do, but it pays off in many, many ways. We're talking about cortisol today, but there's so many other factors in life that this same thing has an impact on.
100%. I mean, I work with a lot of women with autoimmunity, and autoimmunity is just, blowing up the amount of autoimmune, disorders that are happening. And really, it's usually once you have one, you're going to have multiple. And this, to me, it's certainly not the simplistic, because of course autoimmunity has many, many factors to it. But every single woman that I know with an autoimmune disorder has been giving, 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 giving for a long time and not putting herself up there, first in her life. And I believe it's a call from the body to start doing that, And even if you do have an autoimmune disorder, of course you have to do things differently. It is what it is. But I know so many people that have gone into remission when they really do start to take care of themselves, And it's a little reminder when you start going off course and you start allowing those boundaries to kind of, be a little iffy again, and you start to give too much again, the body very quickly tells you, like, hey, guess what? We're going to have a flare, or this is going to happen. And so, I can completely understand it's not easy to look at autoimmunity as any kind of gift, but I do think it is a powerful, if you can get to that place around it, of just being like, my body actually really loves me and really wants me to take care of myself.
I feel like that with my HSV diagnosis, in that I have outbreaks when I am not caring for myself. And it's that little 100%. Reminder of, hey, don't forget to care for you. And sometimes you do need that gentle reminder of not forgetting about yourself, because it's easy. It's easy to get wrapped up in your old lifestyle and your old patterns very fast. Yep. So you brought up insulin and DHEA earlier. I would love just like briefly for you to give us a little bit about like the pathways and how those are also play into the cortisol pathway.
Sure. Well, let's start with DHEA, because both cortisol and DHEA are produced in the adrenals. And so I didn't really mention earlier, the adrenals are these teeny tiny little glands that sit on top of our kidneys, right? And it's kind of crazy what a powerhouse they are, considering they're so small, because they are where our cortisol is produced, where our adrenaline is produced, where our DHEA is produced, and actually small amounts of our sex hormones, our other sex hormones like testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. When we're still cycling, the majority of estrogen and progesterone are made in our ovaries. But once we go into menopause, the only, sex hormone production that we're having is from our adrenals. So most of us think that we don't have any sex hormone production left when we are in menopause, but that's not true. We still have small amounts. And partly how well you've taken care of your adrenals during your cycling years will impact, how much and how well your adrenals can work in menopause. I will say I'm still personally a big believer in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, but, you are, like I said, you're still getting some from your adrenals. And so we look, while you're cycling, we look at cortisol and DHEA as kind of the cortisol is the sort of push hormone, and DHEA is the kind of like slow growth, anti-aging, keeping you vital and just feeling good, right? So I think of it, it's weird to think of it as a laid back hormone because it's actually what we call an androgenic hormone. So it's on the same pathway as testosterone. But in so many ways, it's just like, what is your vitality? When cortisol, on the other hand, is this like push drive kind of a thing. And it's pretty fascinating. There is actually some research about mindset and how if we view a situation in a stressful way, we're going to start producing cortisol. But if we can flip the script on that and look at it as exciting, the body will actually produce more DHEA, which I think is just super cool, right? Like it shows the power of mindset. And I always have to put an addendum here on mindset because I think we have to work with our trauma first before we can really always get into that mindset place, you know? Because sometimes when people try to go straight to mindset, if they're trying to override their traumas and they haven't dealt with them, that's not going to really work in the same ways. But mindset is so, so impactful and important when it comes to our hormone production. And, you know, DHEA naturally starts to decline at around, I think, 30. And we're just going to be sort of going down. And if you're pressing in that stressful state with that more cortisol, that's going to impact that DHEA even more. So it's another reason to not, you know, to try and shift your relationship with stress. So in terms of insulin, for those that don't know, are the hormone that allows sugar that is in our blood, right? So when you eat, or let's say glucose, when you eat food, and it's broken down into glucose, it needs to get into our cells in order for our body to be able to utilize it, right? If it's just hanging out in our blood, it's not a good thing. We want to get it into the cells. And insulin is the driver of glucose into our cells. So it's very important for, you know, energy production, all of these things. And insulin's important because if we had that glucose just hanging out in our blood for too long, we're going to die, right? That's why a diabetic needs insulin in order to not go into a diabetic coma. And so we have this very intimate connection between cortisol, blood sugar, and insulin. So when you're producing that cortisol, blood sugar is going to go up, your insulin's going to go up too. Over time, your cells are going to be like, you know what? We got enough glucose. We're going to kind of shut the door on you, insulin. We don't need any more. And insulin's like, knock, knock, knock. We need to get this glucose out of the blood and in there, you know? And so your body's actually going to produce more insulin in order to make that happen, right? And the cells are like, no. And that's when we develop what's called insulin resistance. And then eventually, obviously, that can lead to diabetes. And so we have this very intimate connection. If you are looking at being under that stress state all the time, your blood sugar is going to be higher. And more than likely, your insulin production is also going to be higher at the same time, too. So it's not just about what you eat. It's about how you live your life.
Ooh, yes.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal.
And I asked for that specifically because I work with clients in the fertility world, and I'm always talking to them about reducing stress because of the impact on cortisol. And I know that it had a metabolic impact, but I wasn't exactly sure how. And so I was really just asking out of my own curiosity so that I can better explain that to other patients so that they understand how this all works together and are just more mindful of that. Mm-hmm. So you brought up lifestyle. What types of strategies or are there any effective strategies for managing and reducing cortisol levels to primarily improve like your sexual well-being or just your overall health?
So, you know, as I mentioned, I said, start with that 5 minutes a day, but then most of us need to take it to the next level, right? And that may mean shifting some things in your life. So what does that mean in terms of maybe, you know, being able to move your body more often? And by moving your body, I always like to tell people, especially actually if you have high cortisol or low cortisol, intense workouts are actually not the best for you. I know so many women, they struggle, you know, with when they are in the wanting to lose weight and they're like, I'm working out so hard and I'm just gaining weight. And I'm like, I guarantee your cortisol is out of whack. That's what's going to happen, right? What you need to do is make your body feel safe again and move it in ways that aren't really pushing that cortisol production, because high intensity workouts are actually pushing your cortisol higher, you know? So walks, I mean, I live, you know, near the mountains and I'm very grateful for that. So I spend a lot of time doing that. You know, people are like walking and I'm like, it is the best underrated exercise out there. You know, just if you walked every day, that would be amazing. It impacts your blood sugar in a positive way, all of these ways. You know, yoga, I think, can be fabulous. Pilates, all of these sort of connectors of your mind and your body to really just take everything, you know, down a notch and get into your body. And then start to create more boundaries in other parts of your life. This is just key. You know, and you have to be really honest with yourself. And again, this is really helpful to work with a coach, because often we don't see where we don't have boundaries. And often we don't see where we are just letting all of this energy go out. And really, when you're in what we call cortisol dysregulation, you want to be pulling in instead of putting out all the time, right? So that can be, you know, if you are, for example, in a relationship and you have kids, you say, listen, I need once a week to go to be by myself. You know, I need to go get my feet rubbed. I need to go, whatever it is, hang out with my friends, whatever it is that's really starting to fill you in. And then, you know, we talked a little bit before we got on about our cycle and actually working with our cycle. And there are certain times of the month where we're naturally just going to have more energy to be out in the world and connect and do those things. And certain times of the month where coming in and being internal and connecting to our intuition. One of my favorite interviews was with a woman who she said she puts it on her calendar, like there's a calendar for her family, and she marks the 2 days before she's going to start her period and the first 2 days that she's started of her period. And she's like, don't come to me. Don't ask me any questions. Just leave me alone. And I thought how amazing that was, right? I mean, she's teaching her family so many wonderful things actually in that process. But she's just like, first day of my period, I'm going to be in bed all day, you know? And I understand not everybody has that option. But if you start tracking your cycle, you can start to see the places and start to create your calendar really around when you are having this time where you need to just allow your body to just chill out. And I think honestly, tracking your cycle and following your cycle is one of the best ways to get out of cortisol dysregulation. I think it's just our natural way of being, right? And we're so far away from that. If we come back to that natural way of being, a lot of stuff will take care of itself.
I love that. And I love to talk about cycle syncing and understanding your menstrual cycles, because like we were talking about beforehand, I know the role that it's played in my life. And I'm actually like right in my ovulation window right now, mm-hmm. which is part of when I do my podcast recordings, because I just have more energy and ability to hold conversations. I'm curious with like diet. in the work that I do, I talk a lot about a non-insulin spiking diet. Is there kind of a diet that you would recommend or recommend staying away from in particular?
So I always say a good place to start is paleo-ish. So, you know, I don't like to get too regimented. And the reality is different bodies will have different needs, right? And so we kind of really do have to play around with and pay attention to our body's reactions to food. But in general, I would say the most of my clients that come to me are not eating enough protein. They're getting a lot less protein than they realize, you know, until we start tracking it. And so I do like a tracking just to see, I don't care about your calories. I don't care about any of that. I just want to see how your macros, so your protein, your carbs, and your fat are looking, you know, for this 3-day period. So we can really understand, you know, make sure that you're getting enough protein because that's going to help with blood sugar stabilization, especially in the morning. If you get that in the morning, you know, I know so many people will start off with coffee first thing in the morning and then eat 2 hours later. And that's horrible for your cortisol. It's just horrible. And your insulin. So not a good way to start, right? Like give yourself that padding. Make sure you're getting enough good fat. A lot of that old idea of fat being bad is still hanging out. You know, I think we've gotten past it for a lot of people, but still a lot of women will struggle with maybe getting enough. And the thing is, cholesterol, you know, which is not the same thing as fat, but is a form of fat, is where our hormones are produced from. Most of us don't realize that, right? All our sex hormones are produced from cholesterol. So you do need cholesterol. You do need good fat. In order to produce cholesterol, you need good fat. And so that's an important part too that I think a lot of people are overlooking. And so making sure that that's on your plate, making sure you get lots of veggies and some fruit to get a lot of, you know, the nutrients, the minerals and the vitamins, what we call the micronutrients, is so important. So that's a good place to start. And then you fill in from there, right? And so some people, gluten-free is very helpful, especially if they have, you know, digestive issues. For some people, staying off dairy is very helpful when they have hormone issues. You got to play around with some of those things, but that's kind of the starting place. Because I just want to see your blood sugar looking like nice, you know, not just we utilize serum tests and we'll see your glucose, which is great. But then I want to see your HbA1c, which is your blood sugar essentially over a 3-month period. And I want to look at your insulin too. And I want to make sure that those are looking nice and beautiful because it is at the heart of all of this.
Yes. I actually started seed cycling recently and I already can tell like that extra fat in my diet, I think is going to be really helpful for me.
And fiber. And it's got good fiber too. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. I've noticed so far and I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I love about seed cycling is you're getting that good fat. And then you're also helping with the fiber to move the hormones that you've used and your liver has broken down. Get it out of your body, right? We don't want it hanging in your body because that's when it can wreak a little bit of havoc, especially estrogen.
Yes. And that's something that I'm ever working on.
Yeah.
But shout out to Mansky's Wellness, who does the seed cycling packages for me.
Oh, have you? Nice. No, I didn't know that.
It's so amazing. Oh my goodness. So basically it's ground up like sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, or I forget exactly.
It goes sesame and sunflower for your luteal. And then pumpkin and flax for your follicular.
Yes. And so they're already ground up and ready. All you got to do is just like put 2 tablespoons in whatever. Loving it.
That's awesome.
But I'll drop the link in the bio for people or in the show notes who want to take a look at that. I'm curious your thoughts too about like breathe right strips. That's something that I talk to my patients about because it helps you get more oxygen in at night, which helps, you know, with your cortisol levels. Have you ever like recommended this or have you ever heard of this before?
I haven't, and I'm super excited. I love learning something new like that. That makes sense to me because certainly, you know, I mean, not just, we do know, you know, people with sleep apnea that their cortisol is very much dysregulated. And I can see how the breathe right strips, especially getting in sort of before you get to that development of sleep apnea, which tends to happen more as we age, although I'm seeing that happen in younger and younger people. I can totally see that. That's, yeah. Any kind of thing that your body can't be completely relaxed when you sleep and get, you know, what it needs, that's going to trigger your cortisol production. So I love that. I'm like, I'm going to have to try that with some of my clients.
Definitely. I recommend it to my patients. And so I have my own set as well. I don't consistently use them, but I was like, if I'm going to sit here and tell people that they should be using them, I should be following the exact same protocols. Like, you know, it'll just help with, like you said, at bedtime, especially, if your body's feeling stressed, if you're having a hard time breathing, getting oxygen in, cortisol spikes. And then we know what the pattern is there.
Right.
So supplements.
Yeah.
Any supplements that you love or recommend?
Yes. So we'll talk about supplements. And I just wanted to add on what you were just saying, because it made me really think about, you know, a big thing is winding down at night before you go to bed too, right? Not being on our computers, not being on our phones, all of that blue light that is triggering your cortisol to stay up. And so I'm a big fan of what I call like a nighttime ritual. So for me, that looks like I'm getting all of my technology out of my room by, you know, I shoot for 8, but it's usually more around 9. And I personally really like to get books that are funny. So sometimes it'll be like comedians or biographies or whatnot, but stuff that's not really intense to have to like process at night, right? Like I'm just enjoying reading it. I usually like to do some kind of meditation before I go to sleep too. Anything that's basically winding your body down. For some people, that's taking a good Epsom salt bath, right? Which is also supportive to detoxification. Yeah, it's a really good one. I'm definitely a huge fan of magnesium and utilizing that. And I have dealt with the sleep issues ever since my surgery. So I know every single which way to try and promote sleep. But I think so many of us are trying to go to sleep when we have our phones on, you know, like, I mean, or our iPads. Like a lot of times clients will be like, oh yeah, I read before bed on my iPad. And I'm like, that's, you know, it's countering your body's ability to really wind down. I'm also a fan of blue light glasses. So the glasses that you can get that actually block blue light. So I tend to start wearing those around probably 8 p.m. And, you know, it's a little different here and when it's light out this late. But going into supplements, I do think supplements are an important therapy as part of cortisol issues. So adaptogenic herbs is a great place to start for most people. I know a lot of people love ashwagandha. I know that's like kind of the big thing these days. I will say it's not my favorite personally because it can be an issue with people with particularly Hashimoto's and sometimes other autoimmune disorders. And so I'm just careful with that. I've also seen it actually be a little bit more energizing for some people, which can be good in certain instances. But obviously, if you're taking it before bed, that's not a good thing, you know. So if ashwagandha works for you, do it, you know. And I know a lot of people that it does work for. It's just not my go-to. I'm a big fan of rhodiola. That is generally well tolerated by most people. And it doesn't, you know, the idea with adaptogenic herbs is doesn't matter if your cortisol is high or low. The adaptogenic nature of that is going to help balance it out. Whether that always works across the board is up for debate. But I find in general, rhodiola is a great, you haven't tested, you know, you need some support. Go for that, you know. There's also some good combination therapies, supplements like Cortisol Manager is one of my favorite. I think that's Integrative Therapeutics. You know, in general, that is a good daytime one. For some people, it also works before bed. So Tulsi tea is also a fabulous thing to drink in the evening, chamomile. You know, there's lots of great herbs like that. So that's a good place to start. I will say that if you are really low in cortisol, and I only recommend doing this if you've actually tested, utilizing what we call an adrenal glandular for a period of time may be very helpful. Like I personally needed a glandular after all of my surgeries and everything and sleep issues because my adrenals were just like beat to death. You know? And so basically a glandular is going to, you know, come from an animal's adrenals, and it's going to have all of the you know, all the nutrients, all the minerals and all those kinds of things in it, they're going to help support your own adrenals and help them kind of like come alive again. So that can be a lifesaver in situations where, like I was talking about earlier, those people that can't get out of bed, you know, just like struggle to get through their day. I'm a big fan of utilizing glandulars for a little while and then going to adaptogenic herbs after that.
I love that. I love that. And there's so many things like we just listed here in this podcast, a million things that are absolutely free.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I think that's where a lot of people get caught up in healthcare or just in overall caring for themselves is they think everything has to cost, or if I'm not paying for it, it's not worth it.
Yep, absolutely.
But the reality is like so many things are free and in our backyard, literally, that we can utilize, and we don't have to spend an arm and a leg always.
Exactly. I totally agree with you that sometimes we don't feel like it's worth it. You know, if it's something, if it's behavior modification, and I get that that can be harder for us, but in reality, that's the thing that's going to really work. You know, like I said, those other things are just like almost adjunct therapies. You know, I mean, yes, it's important what you eat. Yes, I'm a big fan of utilizing supplements to help, but like, that's not going to get you out of it. Like, you have to change the lifestyle approaches, you know, and that includes how you set yourself up for sleep, how you set your days up. So absolutely.
Well, and behavior modification is hard. It's probably the hardest thing to do. And I find this in Western medicine all of the time when I used to work primary care is people want the quick fix.
Yeah.
Because it is easier. It is so much easier to 100%. Take a quick fix. But you're masking the problem.
Right.
And you're not actually addressing the underlying issue. And have a lot of opinions about that. And that's where like, it's so hard in Western medicine because not everybody, but a lot of people don't want to hear these types of other recommendations. And then they're mad that everybody wants to put you on medication. And it's like, well,
what are you going to do?
What do you want? Like, I can only help you as much as you're willing to help you. And
Absolutely.
That's why I don't work primary care very often.
I get it, you know, and I feel for people because we do live in a society and a culture that has overwhelmed all of us to even survive, right? A lot of people are just struggling to survive. So I feel that pain. And this is where we come back to the sort of taking control and empowering ourselves, because our healthcare system is not going to save us. You know, the way that things are set up are not going to save us. So we have to really get very clear on our own personal power, our own abilities, our own, you know, ideas of what our lives should look like and create that. And it's not going to happen in a day. You know, it's going to take some time and you're going to have to unwind things along the way. But that is what's going to get you to true health, right? I mean, any of those medications are going to create side effects. Then you're going to have to take medications for those side effects and on and on and on, right? And people end up feeling so much worse 5 years down the road, right? And this is a way to get sort of out of that trappings, I guess, and, you know, and really make yourself feel as good as you possibly can and live a life that you want to be living.
Yes, I love that. I have one last question for you before we wrap up today. My question is, what is the role that cortisol plays in the emotional aspects of sex, especially like intimacy and connection?
Oof, that's a good one, huh? So I would say that, you know, when we have either a lot of cortisol going on, where we just kind of are like, go, go, go. And literally sometimes people can just feel sort of the pounding in their body, right? Because of the cortisol. It's hard to have deep connections when you're in that state, right? Like deep connection comes from being able to ground into your body, really listen to the person who's sitting next to you or laying next to you or across from you, really allow for sort of this energy exchange. When you're in that pulsed out state, you can't do that, you know, or it's going to be hard. I won't say you can't. And then the other side of the spectrum, if your cortisol is really low because you've been running for so long, you don't have any energy to give to someone else and you're going to be short with them. You're going to be annoyed with them. You're going to be like, I just go away, you know, in general again, you know. It's not allowing you to truly connect, I think, when you're in that either end of the stressed out state. And so, you know, it is interesting. I saw a study where they actually had an erotic movie that they had, I don't remember how many women were in the study. They played an erotic movie, and I think they took their cortisol before and after. And they definitely found those with the highest cortisol, their body's reactions to the movie were blunted, versus if it was a little bit lower beforehand, the body's, you know, reactions were sort of maybe a more normal reaction to that kind of movie. And even though that was, you know, I think that's important to think about, but also we do know that if we actually start sex sometimes, and I'm not trying to like push anybody into having sex when they don't want to have sex, but sometimes making that a priority and just starting into the process can actually get your body into it and actually bring down your cortisol too, right? So this is kind of a mind thing again, right? You got to go back to your mind and be like, okay, I'm going to sort of go against what this cortisol is telling me right now. And I'm going to maybe take some deep breaths, maybe read or watch or do whatever that gets you in the mood, and then follow that, you know. And again, not forcing yourself, but just allowing for that. And so we can see that the cortisol can come down.
I love that. And it's interesting that you point out that the cortisol decreases with sex, but that makes sense, like with orgasm, especially, you know, all of the hormones that are released and
yes,
things that happen in the body. So
yeah. Oxytocin is actually one of the best ways to combat cortisol. I actually just wrote an article about that on my website.
Yeah. Definitely share that. Are you saying that the more orgasms I have, the less cortisol I will have?
It is definitely balancing it out. Let's put it that way, you know? And it's a very, and I love oxytocin too, because obviously orgasms, you know, I mean, and just hugging. I mean, you can get oxytocin from hugging, you know, breastfeeding, all of these things, but also having fun actually produces oxytocin, right? So one of the best ways to combat really intense cortisol spikes is to bring more fun into your life too, right? In your daily life.
I love that. Yeah. I love a prescription for more fun.
Yeah.
So we can talk forever about this because I have a lot to say about it. And this conversation is so amazing. Where can the listeners find you at?
So best place to start is my website, and that's christinegarvin.com. And I do have a hormone school. It's called Get Your Hormones Right. And so I have everything from, you know, very beginner, if you know nothing about hormones, here's a 30-minute class on it, up to 12-week programs. We do live programs too every, you know, 2 or 3 months. We're getting ready to do one called Perimenopause Like a Boss. So for those that don't know much about perimenopause and need some help, that's going to be available. And we'll do that live again in a couple of months. And then I have a podcast also, Hormonally Speaking, as you mentioned earlier. I'm on Instagram at Christine Garvin. I'm on YouTube at Christine Garvin. So come find me in any of those places.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and educate us about how cortisol impacts our life. So I appreciate you.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life, or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns, or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode. and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.